Welcome to SNC's podcast series, SNC Critical Insights. Today we are talking to Jamie Logie, a partner in SNC's Hong Kong office who heads the firm's Asia-Pacific Projects practice. Before moving to Hong Kong in early 2017, Jamie spent nearly 20 years in her London office, working on European, Middle Eastern, African, and global projects. Over the course of Jamie's practice, his work has focused on project, asset, and other finance and development matters across the energy, natural resources, and infrastructure sectors. Jamie has advised on groundbreaking projects, including the Australia-Pacific LNG, the Baikal-Tbilisi-Ceyhan Pipeline Project, Dolphin Energy, Emirates Aluminum, the MoMA Titanium Mineral Sands Project, and financings for Tengiz Chevroil, as well as numerous other energy, mining, and other projects. Jamie most recently advised the China Three Gorges-led consortium on the financing aspects of its $1.39 billion acquisition from affiliates of Odebrecht of Empresa de Generación Huayaga, owner of Peru's third-largest hydropower facility, the Chagla Hydroelectric Power Generation Plant. Today, he will share with us some insight about the transaction. Jamie, welcome. So how did your representation of the consortium come about? And had you done work for any of the consortium members before?
Sure, yes. We advised Ace Investment Fund, a member of a consortium, in connection with its 392 million euro acquisition of an equity interest in EDP's Italian and Polish wind farm project companies back in 2016. Ace Investment Fund is jointly controlled by China Three Gorges, or CTG, Fosun International, and E Fund Management Co. SNC has a strong relationship with its client, China Three Gorges, reflecting our preeminent Chinese SOE practice. Although we are already engaged on the M&A work for the Chagla project, when I first moved to our Hong Kong office in early 2017, I visited CTG in Beijing with our partner Cheng Wei, who's head of our China practice. We made our case to act on the financing too, successfully as it turned out.
What were some of the biggest challenges you faced on the transaction? And how did you overcome them?
Right. So first, closing the acquisition was initially expected to take place before February 2018. However, as a result of an acquisition approval process enacted by the Peruvian Congress in 2018, whose main objective was to prevent withdrawal of funds from the country by Odebrecht and its affiliates, the purchaser had to file for approval from the Peruvian Ministry of Justice. Now, among other things, the approval required the purchaser to deposit a substantial sum of money out of the sale proceeds at closing in a trust account opened by the Peruvian Ministry of Justice. This was pending resolution of the fines to be paid by Odebrecht or their affiliates to the Peruvian government. The approval process was significantly delayed because of the ongoing corruption investigations and political sensitivities in Peru around Odebrecht, which also led partly to the resignation of the then president of Peru. Now, to overcome these challenges, we helped renegotiate certain terms of a transaction and amended and restated the stock purchase agreement in August 2018 to, among other things, extend the outside date and address changes in circumstances as a result of a delayed closing. This included purchase price adjustment in favor of the purchaser for each day of delay in closing, and a termination fee payable by the sellers under certain circumstances. Now, as you can imagine, these developments had implications for the financing. To finance the purchase, Bank of China Limited, through its Luxembourg branch, ICBC, and BBVA, provided the consortium with an $850 million two-year bridge loan and letter of credit facility. But in order to close the transaction, because funds had to be transferred to a Peruvian bank account in order to ensure Peruvian tax efficiency, a second lien structure was put in place, requiring pledge of assets and shares of a target prior to closing, while the existing project finance debt was still outstanding. At closing of the acquisition, the lien structure was amended in order to give lenders a first priority lien. However, because shares of a target company, EGH, were subject to a judgment lien, coordination with a third-party creditor was required in order to lift that lien soon after receipt of funds at closing. Now, the creditor was paid off with proceeds from the purchase price that would otherwise have been available for the seller to apply to other debts. Further, in order to deal with both acquisition finance and project finance features, the financing was structured with an accession structure, pursuant to which EJX acceded to the financing documents immediately upon closing. This got the project required tax treatment, was also driven by commercial decisions of the sponsors to push debt to project company level. So challenges included arranging refinancing by way of a new facility using certain funds terms as used in acquisition financing with a tight closing timetable of a group of development finance institutions or DFIs. Given the nature of the existing financing, there was inevitable complexity in this process and a need to move away from the project finance paradigm the existing lenders were familiar with.
Jamie, to what extent did regional political or economic conditions in Latin America affect the course of the transaction? And how did you structure the transaction to protect your client from potential risks associated with the political and economic uncertainties?
Now, like I was mentioning before, the ongoing corruption investigations and political sensitivities in Peru around Odebrecht, followed by the subsequent resignation of the nation's president, and actually Peru's four most recent presidents are under investigation in connection with alleged bribes paid by Odebrecht, were a definite factor in delays in the transaction's timeline and resulted in a few changes to the terms of a transaction. There were multiple moving pieces that distinguished this from a typical project finance or acquisition finance, and this was a bit of a hybrid of both of these. Further, these Odebrecht-related sensitivities delayed approvals needed from the Peruvian regulators. Now, to help protect our clients, as I was saying earlier, we renegotiated certain terms of the transaction and amended and restated the stock purchase agreement. There was also a purchase price adjustment in favor of the purchaser for each day of delay in closing, and a termination fee payable by the sellers under certain circumstances. Generally, you can imagine that a transaction in these circumstances was subject to a great deal of scrutiny from all sides, including by the press. And of course, there was sensitivity by our Chinese state-owned clients to ensure that everything was dealt with strictly in compliance with all regulations, and in a way that resulted in minimal closing risk.
So, Jamie, what did you learn during the course of the transaction that you wish you had known when you started? And what would you or the consortium have done differently to make the process smoother or easier?
Yeah, well, the complex cross-border M&A and financing deal was certainly complicated due to heavy involvement of state-owned entities, requiring pretty innovative financing techniques and governmental clearances and approvals both in China and Peru. This was the first time the Odebrecht-related process I discussed was being put into practice, so involved a lot of filings and discussions with the Ministry of Justice in Peru. The corruption scandal involving the seller also triggered a lot of information requests from the internal compliance teams at the financing banks that could maybe have been accelerated earlier in the process. Also, negotiations of finance terms continued throughout this extended process, and maybe a focused face-to-face meeting early in the deal could have cut across some of this.
Briefly, what is special about this deal compared with other project financing or acquisition financing deals that you've worked on in the past? And how did your prior work help you in this instance?
So, putting aside for a moment the unique political climate in Latin America right now, let's focus on the financing supporting the deal. Although the bridge loan is on acquisition finance certain funds terms, the loan is structured on a project finance basis based on the credit and cash flow of the project, and so secured by substantially all of EGH's assets and shares. However, it's otherwise non-recourse to the borrower's shareholders or any particular consortium member. This is a move away from a more traditional approach by Chinese banks to require guarantees or other comfort from SOE borrowers. Now, most of my career has been spent working with sponsor clients to structure limited or non-recourse project financings in the energy, natural resources, and infrastructure sectors. This includes a lot of time spent on projects in emerging markets, helping our clients to navigate these challenging jurisdictions, and working with clients to develop viable solutions that achieve their commercial and business objectives, no matter what the surrounding circumstances may be. Now, in this case, we designed an acquisition financing that is, in essence, non-recourse to our clients and looks in many respects like an emerging markets project financing. Luckily, following acquisition finance practice, we locked down certain fund conditions at term sheet stage, and this was fully underwritten by Bank of China. We did this rather than continuing along a strict project finance approach. This was despite the banks running the deal using their project finance teams, so we had to persuade the banks to move away from the project finance model to more of an acquisition finance model.
So what impact does this deal have on Chinese borrowers and their financings in Peru or elsewhere in Latin America, within the context of the Belt and Road Initiative?
Right. Now, S&C's projects practice has a very strong focus on helping borrower clients navigate the complexities of these types of transactions. In fact, more than 80% of our work since 2000 has been for borrowers and sponsors. Chinese borrowers or sponsors need to work with their legal counsel to develop a very clear understanding of the areas into which they're investing, both from a legal and financing perspective, but also from a larger macro country or regional perspective. Understanding this bigger picture, whether as it relates to an investment in Latin America or sub-Saharan Africa, Central Asia, or wherever, will be critical to accurately anticipating and planning deal timelines and also for managing costs. The fact that we're able to get this deal done for our clients is evidence that understanding the roadblocks and being able to develop novel solutions to get past them is key to achieving a successful outcome. So a nice aspect of this deal was our ability to field a team from across our Beijing, Hong Kong, and New York offices to seamlessly help our Chinese SOE clients navigate the complexities of a transaction. Our team included our colleagues Jingjing Lu and Yixing Zeng in our Beijing office, who are available really 24/7 to help our clients. Our preeminent Latin American team, including Sergio Galvez and Verna Allers in New York, also played a key role with their market-leading Latin American and Peru experience. This is really a great model for our clients looking to do deals in Latin America, which is currently a big focus of the Belt and Road Initiative.
In what ways does this deal create a new precedent transaction structure for future foreign acquisitions or project financings?
As I mentioned earlier, this was the first time that this process of government approvals and putting part of the purchase proceeds into a government trust was being put into practice. It's involved a lot of filings and discussions with the Ministry of Justice of Peru. We also liaised a lot with internal compliance teams at the financing banks. Now that we've established a precedent for a successful transaction, it paves the way for similar deals to be done using this model. For more general application, the New York form certain funds financing terms combined with project finance collateral and certain operational terms is a useful model for any client looking to acquire single asset infrastructure and natural resources projects in Latin America or elsewhere. The model would work just as well for a pension or infrastructure fund or other strategic investor as for a Chinese SOE.
Jamie, as a final question, we briefly touched on the Belt and Road Initiative earlier. Can you shed light on how Chinese capital impacts or changes the projects and companies in Latin America?
Sure. Look, we've seen China become a major source of capital in Latin American projects. I see from a report published by The Dialogue recently that China Development Bank and China Exim Bank have provided over $140 billion in finance to Latin America since 2005, when Chinese banks began lending into the region. This Chinese finance top sovereign lending over the same period from either the World Bank or the Inter-American Development Bank, both of which have been major capital sources in the region. The Belt and Road Initiative has been encouraging closer cooperation between China and other countries along the road. With more Chinese capital flowing in Latin America, we're expecting to see more Chinese investment in Latin American companies, as well as more involvement in local project developments. Of course, opportunities are always associated with risks, and that's really where our expertise comes into play. As I was saying, political uncertainties in the region pose relatively greater risks to investors. We're able to guide our clients through these challenges and structure deals to protect their interests to the largest extent. I'd like to think the work we did on this deal, reflecting S&C's overall approach to legal practice, once again established our ability to come up with workable and commercial, bespoke solutions, even in the most challenging circumstances.
Thank you for listening to S&C Critical Insights. For more information about our practice, please visit us on the web at www.solcrom.com.